We've been walking through these final chapters of Hebrews together. Although last week, Pastor Caleb was in the Psalms, and I thank him for carrying the load last week in multiple ways of ministry while I was gone. Actually, that thanks goes to several of you over the last few weeks. With Ross being gone and then my family being gone, several individuals filled in different ministries. And I say thank you for how the body functioned that way. Hebrews 11. Within these final chapters of Hebrews, we're being called to faith. And we're being called to faith in some ways through example after example being provided. We've seen Abel have faith with limited information to offer a sacrifice. We've seen Enoch, just his everyday through mundane 300 years of life, having faith in God. We've seen Noah having faith to pick up some tools and build an ark for something that he'd never even seen before. And so in this way, this chapter is providing example after example that challenges us that faith is possible. I mean, in the sequence of these final chapters, as we've been called to, at times, suffer. And I can hear these individuals at the end of chapter 10 say, wait a minute, you're calling us to do this. This is too hard. And then Hebrews 11 comes in and says, wait a minute, it's not too hard. Look at all these examples of these individuals who've had faith in very difficult situations. It is possible to do this. As I was thinking through this week, I was reminded of my inspiration that it was possible for me someday to be an NBA basketball player while I was in elementary school. Some of you already chuckled at that. I knew very early that I was not going to be tall. There is nobody in my family over 6 foot. The average height of an NBA player is 6'6". And so I knew that I did not have much future in that realm. But I enjoyed the game of basketball. But there were two NBA players when I was a kid in the 90s that told me it was possible to be short and play the NBA. Spud Webb. And some of you guys were remembering his name. 6'5", I believe. 5'5". Won NBA dunk contest. And Muggsy Bogues, he's my favorite of the two. 5'3", Charlotte Hornets. He could dribble circles around these 7-foot giants. And so as a short guy, I could say, look at them. It's possible. Probably not probable, but it's possible I could make the NBA. Now, my illustration breaks down. I didn't make the starting squad of my high school basketball team, let alone the NBA. But their ability to do it says this could happen. This is what our chapter is doing for us. Church, hang on, have faith. And you shake your head and say, oh, I don't know. It's impossible. Well, look at Abel. He had it. Look at Enoch. I mean, he just goes 300 years with faith with God and God takes him home. And in this list of example after example of faith, we get to one of the most prominent, Abraham. Abraham, who is the foundational in God's plan of salvation. Abraham, the father of Israel, in Galatians 3 calls, the man of faith, who is the father of all who have faith. And here's Abraham's testimony that it's not impossible to have faith. Hebrews 11, verse number 8. I'll start reading. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out of a place, that he was to receive an inheritance. And he went out not knowing where he was going. By faith, he went to live in the land of promise as in a foreign land, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, heirs with him of the same promise. And he was looking forward to the city that was the foundation, whose designer and builder is God. By faith, Sarah herself received power to conceive, even when she was past the age, since she considered him faithful, who had promised. Therefore, from one man, and him as good as dead, were born descendants as many as the stars of the heaven, and as many as the innumerable grains of sand by the seashore. These all died in faith, not having received the things promised, but having seen them and greeted them from afar, and having acknowledged that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. For people who speak thus make it clear that they are seeking a homeland. If they had been thinking of that land from which they had gone out of, they could have had the opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, and he has prepared for them a city. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac. And he who had received the promise was in the act of offering up his only son, of whom it was said, through Isaac shall your offspring be named. He considered that God was able even to raise him from the dead, from which, figuratively speaking, he did receive him back. Now that was a lot. I'm going to tell you right now, we are not going to cover all those verses this morning. Maybe by next Sunday, maybe longer. But I want you to get the whole picture of this testimony of Abraham. In this chapter, we have the highlights of Abraham's life, where he has faith at different points in his life that really, if you're engaged and you see what Abraham's going through, there's part of it that just says, wait a minute, Abraham, how did you do that? Like, how did you have faith for that? You get to a few more verses and you like to shake your head and say, Abraham, how did you have faith for that? Now, part of the answer for that question goes to the work of God in Abraham's life. We get in Genesis 12, God calling Abraham out, and we kind of see a fragment of a conversation. Paul in Galatians 3 uses a phrase that made me stop this week a few different times. Because in Galatians 3, it says, well, I should actually just read it. And the scriptures, foreseeing that God would justify the Gentiles by faith, preached the gospel beforehand to Abraham, saying, in you shall all the nations be blessed. I would have loved to hear that sermon. What did that sound like? In some way, though, God presents the good news of salvation, and he shows where it begins with here, through you I will bless all the nations. And God works faith in Abraham's life. Galatians says, Abraham believed God and it was counted to him for righteousness. Abraham had saving faith in God's work to redeem, to save. Today it's the same gospel. You know, you have the benefit of a little more information maybe than Abraham got. Not sure what all that sermon was for Abraham. But today I can challenge you with good news. It starts with the realization that we are sinners before a holy God. I don't have to really know who you are to say that statement. We are all sinners before a holy God. And because of God's holiness, he will judge sin. And his judgment for sin is right. It's fitting. It is eternal judgment in hell. And yet the same God who judges sin is also the merciful God who provides payment for sin. In his Son, Jesus Christ, who is righteous, should not die, and yet does die to make payment for sin. So that all who trust in Jesus Christ, all who have faith, turn from their sin and rely upon Jesus' payment for their sin, are made righteous. Now, Abraham's statement is much simpler. He believed. He had faith in God and was counted for righteousness. And God takes our faith and says, yes, I see the faith in Jesus Christ's payment, and you are righteous. Nothing else. Actually, Galatians 3 goes on farther. It's not through works. It is only through faith. And so God begins a work in Abraham's life. He has faith, but we see this faith play itself out on so many levels in Abraham's life that just makes me shake my head. I mean, Genesis 12, God calls Abraham. Abraham at the time is living in the city of Ur. It is no big deal if you don't know the city of Ur. Like thousands of years ago, there's Ur in what we would call modern-day Iraq. And Ur is it's a wicked city. They've dug it out. And in the middle of Ur, there was this massive temple structure to a god of the moon that they worshipped. Within their excavation, there is graves, mass graves of individuals who were sacrificed to their moon god. Now you can say, well, Abraham, he was a good guy. He probably wouldn't have been a part of that. Well, the book of Joshua 24 tells us that Abraham was part of that worship. He was idolatrous. Abraham was sinful. And to this sinful guy, I shake my head because it doesn't sound like he should be part of a hall of faith. God comes to Abraham and calls him. And the call is, Abraham, I need you to go. You need to leave your house. You need to leave your city. You need to leave everything that you know. And I stop here because I shake my head. I'm a planner. Like I just got back from vacation. I plan every step of the way. I Google where I'm going before I go. I want to know where the traffic's going to be. I want to know where I'm going to buy my food. I want to know where I'm going to stop for hotels. I plan. I want to know the best restaurants in the way and the best rest stops because I hate making a stop and then going like a few more miles and realizing there was a better stop just farther down the road. I want to plan it all out. And so I hear Abraham being called to go on a trip. You leave your home and you go. And there's this big question hanging over my head. Where? Like, how much do I pack? Like, where are we going, God? And Abraham doesn't get the answer. The only blank that's filled in is where I'll tell you to go. And by faith, Abraham obeyed. Not just that he left what he knew and the culture that he knew and the community that he knew and the family that he knew. He gets and goes to a place he has no clue where he's going. He couldn't have checked Zillow to see what the housing market was. There was no YouTube clips for the best restaurants in the new area he's headed to. He has no clue. He can't even answer the question when people in the caravan ask him, hey, Abraham, are we almost there yet? I don't know because I don't know where there is. I think the only perk that Abraham had as is when he's asked, you need to stop for directions. Abraham can't stop for directions because he doesn't even know where to ask to get to. They just leave. And yet Abraham has faith. I hope you're engaged enough to ask the question, how? Like, how did he have faith in that moment to do that? And yet it keeps on going. God gives Abraham some promises. One of the big promises that is Abraham, you're going to have a son and that's going to lead a whole bunch of kids. In fact, you're going to have so many offspring, it's going to be like the sands of the seashore. Only problem is Abraham doesn't have any children yet and he's old. I mean, when he gets the first promise from God, he's 75 years old. His wife, Sarah, is 66. And then God just makes sure that Abraham still knows what the promise is. He gets the same promise repeated to him when he's 99. And then Abraham gets the fulfillment of the promise when he's 100. That is waiting for 25 years. And all I say is, how? How do you do that? And then you keep on going through his life, and the same individual is called to give up the fulfillment of his promise from God, his only son, Isaac. And Abraham takes his son, and they, I assume, take a long walk up a mountain. I assume Abraham is dreading getting to the top. But Abraham has faith. In fact, it says he's confident with it. And I shake my head and I just, how? How you do this one, Abraham? And then you keep on going through his life and he gets to the end of his life. And our passage even says he dies in faith having not received what was promised. Like he gets to the finish line and there are still blanks not filled in with what God promised him. And yet he still dies in faith. And I again ask the question, how? How'd you do this? I ask the question because we've already covered in verse number 6 that it's only faith that pleases God. And I ask the question because faith can be hard. Our faith wavers. There are difficult days. There's days we shake our head. There's days our unbelief mix in with our belief. So when I see Abraham, I simply have to ask the question, say, Abraham, how'd you do it? How'd you have faith? So what our passage does is every time it gives us one of these situations of how Abraham had faith in a situation, it gives us why he was able to do it. It gives us an answer. So let's just start walking through and answering this question. How was faith possible? Abraham, how'd you do it? So verse number 8, he gives us the first one, and in the first few verses, he's called to go, and we see that faith focuses on the future and the present unknown. So faith puts a focus down the road into the future. And part of us say, how far in the future? Well, look at the passage. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was to receive as an inheritance. And he went out not knowing where he was going. So like I said, there's a whole bunch of unknown here. Abraham, leave. Where? I'm not telling you that yet. And in fact, if you keep on going through the book of Genesis, it's not till chapter 15 that he's already made part of his journey that he finds out that he's actually going to get the land as an inheritance. In Genesis 12, he doesn't get told that. He just says, get going. And then as you go down the road, he finds out more of God's plan for him. And then if you keep on going down the road, he finds out more of God's plan for him. Yet here in this moment, he makes an amazing step of faith. He leaves. And then he gets to the land, and you like to think, okay, everything's good, right? Verse 9, he gets to the land, end of story. Yet verse number 9, he says that he's still living in tents with Isaac, Jacob, heirs with him of the same promise. So here's where it gets complex now. Abraham's promised land for inheritance. They get to the land, and he doesn't get the land. Let's put this in real life. Hypothetically speaking, please catch that word, okay? Because I'm going to go down an illustration road, and you're going to think you're going to name it and claim it kind of guy. Hypothetically speaking, suppose God promised you big amounts of land. Let's just, the state of New Jersey. And so you're like, no, thank you. I'll hold back on that promise, God. I only say the state of New Jersey because it's about the same size of land mass as Abraham's promise was. And God promises you guys, you leave, you get to New Jersey, it's your inheritance. And you get to New Jersey. And then you spend the rest of your life living out of a pop-up camper paying people for rent. And that's what Abraham did. Except he didn't have a pop-up camper. I know that. He had a tent. And then his son lived. And his son didn't get the land. And then his grandson lived. And his grandson didn't get the land. Abraham dies, and the only piece of property that he owns is the cave that he bought to bury his wife in. That's to his name. None of it else is his name. So I get to this stage, and I say, okay, wait a minute. Abraham, you had obedience. You left. You evidently have faith. You lived your life in this land, and yet you're still not getting the very thing that God promised you, the land. And I ask the question, how? Verse number 10. For he was looking forward to the city that has a foundation whose designer and builder is God. Okay, you don't need to say it out loud, but answer it in your heads. What was Abraham actually looking forward to? It wasn't in Canaan. What Abraham was looking forward to had nothing to do with a plot of land in the Middle East. It was a city that God would build. He was looking forward to heaven. I mean, look down to verse number 16. Let's just do it again. I'm going to make my point a second time. So verse number 13 says, they're strangers, they're aliens in the land. So they're in a foreign land, they don't belong there. Verse 14, and they're looking for a homeland. And before we think that homeland is going to be a physical piece of property that they're looking for, verse number 15 says, and if they just wanted a homeland, they could have turned around and gone back to Ur and had land. They could have had a home. But they're not looking for that type of homeland. Verse 16, but as it is, they desired a better country. And before we think better country is referring to like lakefront property or like big acreage outside of town in the country, they define what a better country is. A heavenly one. Okay, this part, man, this happened several times for me this week where I've been amazed what Abraham grasped. Because he's grasped more than I think we grasp. He grasped this picture that God's promise of the land was not the end goal of God's work in Abraham's life, that it was a foretaste of what God was really doing, and that was a city that God would build that would last for eternity that Abraham wanted to be a part of. We don't get a description of that city all the way till Revelation 21, where a new Jerusalem descends and God describes us in glowing terms, and yet here's Abraham thousands of years in the past saying, that's what I'm looking forward to. Man, I can't wait for that one to happen. Abraham, aren't you a little bit bummed? I mean, you don't have any physical blessing here that God told you were going to get. Nope, because I'm looking forward to that. I mean, that's what my hope's on. I'm looking for a better country. How is Abraham able to have faith in God, even though God does not deliver on his earthly promise to Abraham until Abraham's dead, Abraham's son's dead, Abraham's grandson is dead, and 440 years go by? Because the focus of Abraham's faith is not on earthly blessings, but on eternity with God. If all Abraham was looking for was a better home, a better neighborhood, a better piece of property, a better income, a greater sense of belonging, and heaven was the cherry on top, his faith would have fallen a long time ago. He would have had a lot of angry conversations with God, calling out God for not delivering on his promises earlier, and what a waste of a time it was to leave his city. Look what I'm getting out of this. I don't even have a homeland yet. And yet, by God's grace, Abraham was looking for something better. He was longing for something better. Better than this world could provide, because he was longing for something that would last for eternity. He was longing for something that could not be taken away and raided away by an army. He was looking for something that wasn't defiled by sin. Church, if you tie your faith in God to earthly blessings, your faith will fluctuate in a sickeningly rate like a carnival ride. If you tie your faith in God earthly blessings like your family and comforts and health and prosperity and answers to prayer, your faith will go up and down. Because our cities and our homes and our families and our jobs and our toys and even our country is temporary. And we should long for something that's better. But Christians, I feel that so often we hang our faith and define God's goodness on the here and now. And God's working for something better. If you have future-facing faith, if you have assurance that what is coming in Christ for eternity is far better than anything that you could experience in the here and now, even if God answered every single wish on your wish list and every prayer that you've prayed over the past 17 years, that what is coming is better, then your faith remains. But I'm convinced that I think there are times in our life that we fall down this trap of thinking, if only God would give me this, then I would be satisfied. If only he would do this, then I would never doubt God again. This is what God needs to give me if he's good. And here's an individual who doesn't get what God promised and dies in faith. Because what his faith is in and what he's looking for is still to come. Abraham, how can you still have faith? Well, I still have faith because my faith is focused upon the future. It's focused upon eternity, not the here and now. What I long God to do in my life is down there in eternity, not so much right now. Abraham, how can you have faith? Well, it keeps on going. The next few verses, you get to 11, and you continue to say, here's more examples of faith. And we see faith focuses on God's faithfulness in the waiting. By faith, Sarah, having received power to conceive, even when she was past the age, since she considered him faithful who had promised. Now, I need to stop here. Let's pause. I need to do some quick explaining. Because it says, by faith, Abraham, and then it says, by faith, Sarah. And then later on, it says, by faith, Abraham. So you got this Sarah paragraph in the middle. And there's some verbiage here that makes some individuals take a couple different roads. And I think we're going to end up in the same place, but I want to make sure I explain them to you. The verb, by faith, Sarah conceived, that word conceived that we get in our ESV or whatever you're reading today. The verb really, if we applied it literally, gets only applied to Abraham. Okay. So Sarah has the baby, but what that verse is talking about is actually speaking of Abraham. So really we take the verse, it would read something like this: by faith, Abraham, together with Sarah, received the power to begat a child when he was past age. Now, I'm not trying to belittle Sarah in this, but I just think if we're going through the sequence, I kind of side that it's Abraham that's the focus. Either way, Sarah's in the picture, and either way, the reason for the faith is the same. What the verse is referring to is a promise given to by God to Abraham and Sarah. You're going to have a kid. I think the land one was an easier promise. Abraham's 75, Sarah's 66. You're going to have a kid. And then they wait. The only other time we have recorded that God gives the promise again is 24 years later. Maybe God says other things along the way, but that's a long time. I mean, I just try to fill some of the blanks in. I wonder if Sarah comes back. You really think we heard God right on that one? Okay. I think maybe it was something else we heard. Maybe it meant a kid goat. We're having a lot of goats, right? That's what he's talking about. That's a lot of time to begin to wonder if you really heard God right. That's a lot of waiting. Okay, you might be the exception to this rule, but I'm going to make a general statement. We don't do good waiting. Okay. I heard a lot of, We don't. And I think the more technology you get, the worse we get at waiting. And if you think you are good at waiting, then let me take you to Meijer. I'm going to put you behind that person who brought 89 coupons for 27 items. And you only have one item more than the express lane checkout requires. So you can't move lanes. And you're going to sit there through all those coupons. And let me tell you, then tell me how good at waiting you are. I mean, this is me in the mornings. I make my oatmeal and I have to heat my oatmeal for 2 minutes. Okay, you know how many times this week I had a handful of cold cereal, was waiting for my oatmeal to get going? I mean, who's going to wait for breakfast for 2 minutes? We don't do a good job waiting. And yet here's Abraham and Sarah. 25 years. This waiting for a child made me think this week. So my wife and I did not have kids as early as we would have liked or thought we were going to have kids. We didn't have kids. It was long enough after we got married that we still didn't have kids that people began asking us, so when do you think you're going to have kids? That was not a fun question because we didn't know the answer. And I think there were days we were scared of the answer. I was texting a friend yesterday,
Yesterday they announced that they are expecting their first child after waiting for 9 years. And I texted them a big congratulations. And as we texted back and forth, he admitted, he's like, you know, we were together last year and that was some dark days for me. There are a lot of dark days in waiting, aren't there? 25 years. You realize how many months that is of Sarah coming to the tent and Abraham looking and Sarah saying, Abraham, I'm not pregnant right now. Not this month. 25 years. You know how many birthdays that is? Where you celebrate another year of life and you realize it just got that much harder for this promise to come true? That's a lot of waiting. I think we struggle even more when it comes to waiting with God. When I wait for my oatmeal, at least I know it's only 2 minutes. I can see the clock go down. When I come to the doctor's office and I wait for my appointment, I at least can size up the room and say, well, they are here before me and they were here before me, but those people arrived after me, so they don't get to come. They don't get in before I get in. So I at least know 2 more people and I'm good. I can pull up my phone right now and I know I'm waiting for a few audiobooks from the library, and I know on one book I'm 10th in line and they say an estimation of 6 weeks before I get my book. The other one I'm 116th in line and I'll be waiting into next year. But I'm okay with that. I know I can come back and check next week and maybe somebody returned the book quicker and maybe I bumped up in line a little bit. And I think it's easier even to wait in those moments because I can see it. I know there's a definite. When it comes with waiting with God, how long? I think this is why the psalmist yells out, how long, O Lord? Will you hide your face from me forever? How long will I suffer? How long shall my enemies rejoice over me? Psalms 13. I think anybody who's gone through a trial of waiting for a time has asked those how long questions. And I think the scary thing in asking those questions as we wait upon God is, unlike Abraham, who knew that God promised that at some point in their life they were going to have the kid, when we ask the how long question with God, the answer might be the entirety of our life. God, how long do I got to walk through this one? And there are times where we even ask the question, God, how long until you give me this? And the answer might be, never. And yet here is Abraham, and they wait. Now, instead of what should happen in the waiting moments, see, the waiting moments upon God should be times of working out our faith and building our faith muscles as we think about God's glory and God's wisdom and God's goodness and sufficiency, that he's good right now and I'm going to wait another day on this one. And he's wise, and not only does he have what is good, but he has the right time for this. And instead of waiting making us build those faith muscles, what so often happens is waiting reveals how much unfaith is still within our lives and not faith. Because what comes to the surface in our waiting moments is so often not faith in God. Maybe you recognize some of these signs in your life in waiting. Waiting on God will often give way to doubt. For Abraham and Sarah, they had those moments, didn't they? I mean, they responded in laughter to God. See, when we're convinced what is right, what needs to happen in our life, or I mean, we know a lot, so what happens, what should happen in that person's life, and in that person's life, and that person's life, God, we got it all figured out. When we're convinced that we know what is right, And then we do not see it happen. The natural response is to begin to doubt God's goodness and God's wisdom. God, why are you holding back from me? God, don't you know their life would be better if you just gave them this? If you changed that person? And then if the doubting continues on long enough, we move into waiting upon God, then begins to reveal anger in our life. God, how do you keep on holding back from me? We would maybe not say it, but we begin to broach the thinking that God has wronged us now. And then we keep on going down this road, waiting on God. Instead of going to faith, it turns to doubt and anger, and eventually it turns into despair. Well, what's the whole point of this? Like, why even bother praying? Like, I haven't been praying for this one for 5 years already. It hasn't changed anything around me. Maybe the despair sounds differently. Why bother with this? I mean, if I have to serve here and here and here, and God can't give me this little thing over here, like, what's the point? And if we keep on going down this road, waiting on God will then often result in envy. As we look at those individuals who have what we want in our life and we think God should give it to us. God, how dare you go bless them? They didn't even want that blessing. They weren't even praying for that blessing. And we compare ourselves with other individuals, and we judge God for how we think he's been unfair in our life. We can keep going. We don't do waiting well. Waiting on God will often result in compromising what we know is right to get what we want. What would that look like? Sarah and Abraham, it might look like someone offering up a handmaiden instead of herself to saying, here, God will work through this way. Maybe it's, well, I'm just going to skim off my employer's books. God's not providing for me anyway. Maybe it will look like, I Pastor, I know he's not saved, but he's a really good person, and I'm tired of being alone. God hasn't given me anybody else. And we will compromise what we know is biblically right and true and good for us to get what we want because we're tired of waiting upon God. And then we begin to look for joy away from God. In our minds, we're justified in our actions. God, you're not meeting my need here, so I have to look over here to satisfy me. We don't wait well. And I don't want to put Sarah and Abraham on this pedestal of like perfection, because they're not there. I made reference to them throughout these. Do they have moments of doubt? I saw three people nod their head. I can just give you the answer. Yes. Did they have moments of doubt? Yes. Did they take matters into their own hands? Yes. And those are just the ones we know. They're human, so I think it's a safe assumption that there are some low days for them. I think it's just a safe assumption that there are some times where there's just, get out of the tent and go yell at the sky. God, how much longer on this one, God? Do you realize this was another wasted year? And yet when we get to Hebrews 11, come back to it, by faith, the overarching brush that Hebrews paints of these individuals is they had faith, which to me is so comforting. Because the test of faith is not acing it, it's remaining in it. I may waver, and we may cry out, but faith remains. And here's Abraham and Sarah, and they wait faithfully upon God that he will fulfill the promise that he's given to them. And I say, how? I could show you a notebook I have. I'm not a good journaler. I'd love to be a better journaler. But I do have a journal. And there's weeks I don't write anything, and then there's weeks I scribble all over the thing. And there are pages in the journal that I'll have phrases, God, I don't think I can do this one much longer. And it will work itself out where I begin to say, okay, by the end of the page, it's God, I'm going to trust you today. Maybe one more day I can do it. So when I see Abraham and Sarah for 25 years doing this, I ask how. How do you do this one? Look back to verse number 11. By faith, Sarah herself received power to conceive, even she was past the age, since she considered him faithful who had promised. Faith focuses on God's faithfulness in the waiting. God, today I know you're faithful to forgive me in Jesus Christ. I know you're faithful to provide victory in temptation. God, today I know you're faithful to love me unconditionally. I know you're faithful to be with me today. God, I know you're faithful to meet my needs. You keep on doing it day after day. God, I know that you're faithful today to give me everything I need today for life and godliness. God, I know you're not going to miss a beat in caring for me. You'll not forget about me. You'll not change your mind about me. You'll not stop loving me. Father, today you're faithful. What would change in our faith as we wait upon God, that instead of looking at our circumstance, we actually looked at God's faithfulness? What would change in our faith? Instead of dwelling on, God, what about this and what about this and still over here, God, that instead we preached God's faithfulness to us over and over again. God, I know you're faithful. You've never reneged on one of your promises. God, you're faithful. God, I know you're faithful in your plan for me. And it's not some afterthought. It's been eternity past through today and into eternity future. You're faithful. Would our faith get stronger by thinking more upon God's faithfulness? Abraham, how have you had faith? If we could sit down with Abraham, Abraham could speak about, well, actually, you know, when I was in Canaan, I was kind of looking for something more than the land. We wasn't focused on that. And we'd be baffled for a few minutes. You're like, you're serious? Because that's a lot of property. No, actually, I was thinking more about heaven. It's better. Abraham, I got to know for a little bit here. 25 years, okay? It's a lot of waiting. How'd you do it? Well, God's faithful. You know? He never breaks his word. But honestly, if we could sit down with Abraham, I think he'd point us in a different direction. John 8, you don't need to turn. I'm just going to reference it. John 8's a complex chapter. There's a bunch of Jews and they're mad at Jesus. Some of you are like, no way. That's happened a few times. Yeah, it's happened a few times. And they're mad at Jesus. And Jesus is making some statements about Abraham that's ruffling their feathers. I mean, they have him on a pedestal and he's kind of taking him down off the pedestal. And then he makes this amazing claim at the end of John 8, verse 56. Your father Abraham rejoiced that he would see my day. So Abraham's happy that he could see my day, Jesus' day. Okay. Then he says, and he saw it and was glad. That's past tense. Okay. I know some of you guys love your superhero movies and time travel just kind of goes this way and that way. So you're okay with past and present all mixing together. For the rest of us who kind of lead this way, that just made really rough sense.
Because Jesus just made a statement that here's this guy named Abraham, and he lived a few thousand years ago, by the way. And you know what? He was really happy because he saw my day. And the verbiage isn't that somehow he kind of looked forward and kind of connected some dots. And no. He's already saw it. In some way, Abraham's faith, I think through God preaching the gospel, saw the fulfillment of God's promise in Jesus Christ. He saw it. Abraham, how do you have faith? And yes, he could say, well, God, future, heaven, faithfulness. But ultimately, I think he says, Jesus Christ. And if we want to talk about faith, here's Jesus Christ. Faith to go and leave a home? How about Jesus Christ to leave heaven's glory? And to go to a place that's not his home. He's a stranger. To be born in a sinful world. How about faith to wait for 25 years for a child? How would it endure human suffering for 33 years and then to fully endure the cross? So that he would not lose anyone that God has given to him as his children. That's faithfulness. Christ's faithfulness to me is that I will never be lost. Christ's faithfulness to me is that his payment is enough. Church body, Christian, faith is possible. I don't know what this week was for you. I don't know if it was year number nine of waiting. I don't know if you're scared of the answer when you ask God how long. I don't know how empty you came in today, how wavering your faith was today. But please hear me say, through Jesus Christ and his faithfulness to us, faith today is 100% possible. So will you have faith? Let's pray. And so, God, we say thank you for your word. We pray that through the Spirit you take your word and you do a work in our life. Church family, would you take the moment? Would you think through God's word in your life, where your life and the word intersects today? And would you intentionally, not look into yourself to well up more faith, but look to the author and finisher of our faith, Jesus Christ. Maybe you need to confess where you've seen unfaith signs in your waiting show up and plead with God to work in your life to produce other fruit. And then if you're here today, and this is not a footnote, this is our burden. If you're here today and you do not know faith in Jesus Christ as your only hope for payment of your sin, I'd love to talk to you. I'd love to send somebody else down to talk with you. To show you what hope is found in Jesus Christ, who made payment for sin, so that we could be counted righteous before a holy God. Father, would you work for your glory and your people? In Jesus' name we pray these things. Amen.